Hi, and welcome to the Rare Business Podcast. My name is Adrian Swinsko, and I'm a consultant, advisor, researcher, and writer on all things related to customer service and customer experience. Through this podcast, I seek out and interview CEOs, entrepreneurs, business and tech leaders, and leading thinkers about what it takes to build organizations that produce better outcomes for both customers and employees in this fast-moving modern age that we live in. If this is your first time listening to one of these interviews, then welcome. And please do dive into the archives at adrianswinsko.com, as I've now completed over 250 of these interviews in the last few years. If this is not your first time listening, then thank you for returning, and I'll aim to do a good enough job to keep you coming back week after week. Anyway, that's enough from me right now. Let's get into the interview. Welcome to the next edition of the Rare Business Podcast. This is probably part two of the podcast interviews that I've been doing at PegaWorld 2019 here in Las Vegas, which is, well, I've been here a few times now. And I'm actually with Rob Walker again. We seem to be an annual conversation. So, Rob, so hi, Rob, welcome.
Thank you.
But for the people that, because I've done, it blows my mind, I've done about over 300 of these interviews now, which is ridiculous, but great, because I get to learn and speak to lots of different sort of people, and this is, I think, the third time that we've spoken. But for the people that haven't heard the previous conversations, can you give us a bit of a thumbnail sketch of you and who you are and what you kind of do for Pega?
Sure. Yeah, the one thing that I probably admitted to during one of the first two interviews that we did was that I have been in this space for a very long time. So I got a PhD in artificial intelligence, actually, in 92.
And before was, people knew it was a thing.
Oh, absolutely. and actually before it was a thing.
Right, there you go.
Yeah, so at that time we were sort of worrying about, can we, you know, can AI beat the world champion chess?
Yeah.
Well, anyway, that ship sailed mm-hmm. a long time ago now.
Yeah, yeah.
But it did get me very interested, obviously, in AI, and I took it, I did my PhD because I was obviously fascinated, but I did want to make it a lot more practical, so I, you know, founded my own company that was then acquired by a Silicon Valley company that was then acquired by Pega.
Okay.
And but the bottom line is that I've been doing this for a very long time, and within Pega, I'm responsible for our sort of one-to-one customer engagement thing,
right.
But that includes the AI and decisioning technologies that mm-hmm. power that.
Okay. So, because we talked about, I think the first time we talked about, what did we talk about? We talked about next best action.
Yes.
And, which is fascinating because I always think that you guys are on the leading edge, if not kind of out in front of everybody. I mean, I think people started talking about next best action as a company whilst everybody was talking about next best offer, because it was a push and it was like the changes of the dimension. And I've seen that actually you've made that sort of market, as it were, change that narrative, and actually people are starting to adopt it themselves, which is brilliant. Then you can move on to what we talked about, is sort of the T-switch that you built into the technology, which is the difference between transparent and opaque AI and kind of the issues that surround that. And so that's great. So it's, again, but this time it's kind of moved on a little bit further. And this time you talked about, was it on empathy? Now, I think you did a fantastic job. I always like to see you speak. It was pretty funny. And some of the stuff was challenging, amazing, and sort of very thoughtful. But before we get into some of the things that you talked about, like, can you help me understand how you're defining empathy? Because
sure.
I think it's a good place to start.
Yes, yes. And I will answer that absolutely, but just on the sort of the progression of our interview, sort of from next best action and then about transparency, because I think it's really a natural progression that it's they're all sort of premeditated on each other.
Yeah.
Right? So next best action we've been doing in terms of, you know, it's not just about offers, it's about overall customer engagement. What is the best action to mm-hmm. take, including no action at all?
Yeah.
Just be, you know, shut up and be silent. All of these things.
It's not
that's,
about you.
That's what, that's what next best action is. It's to determine best in next best action, you require a lot of predictive models and a lot of predictive algorithms, mm-hmm. thousands.
Mm-hmm.
So then for us, it was logical to say, well, some of these algorithms are maybe a little bit scary, and with all the legislation and also some common sense, we then introduced this T-switch for transparency to sort of, you know, allow companies to take control over those algorithms. Mm-hmm. And at that same level, it's just a sort of the higher level decision orchestration mm-hmm. level, is also where empathy sits, yeah. right? So because we own, for the companies we work with, which are all, you know, typically Fortune 500 companies, yeah. so we're very, very big, millions, tens of millions, sometimes hundreds of millions of customers, billions of interactions. So we see a lot of data, and we're in a position to measure what we would call empathy. And yeah. then the definition is that the shortcut, the way we think about it, is like, what would happen if companies put themselves in their customers' shoes, mm-hmm. right? So we're very practical about this, sure. right? It's not like this is not a philosophical discussion. It's about if you want to empathize with your customers, you need to look at it from an outside-in perspective, mm-hmm. which not all companies do or are willing to do. And outside-in means that you look at, okay, you're trying to sell this thing or talk about this thing, but what is the value to the customer? Mm-hmm. That's one thing. The other one that I discussed a lot in the keynote is things like suitability, which basically means, is it appropriate to do it?
Yeah.
Right. So that's touching on the ethics mm-hmm. side of that. But the other interesting thing about empathy is like, do you even remember what we just talked about? Right. It's like somebody, a customer is doing something on the web, is looking for baby food, returns to the home page, there is recommendations for shaving cream. It's just, if this was a human conversation, it would just be horrible.
So I think there's an interesting thing. I use this kind of story to illustrate kind of how sometimes preposterous some of these things that we make these separations between what happens online and what would happen offline. And so you think about the people talk about personalization and talk about tracking and cookies and all this type of stuff. And so you might go to a website and you're looking at a pair of shoes, and then you go, okay, fine, I'll maybe get them later. And then you go to other sort of things, and then these adverts for shoes keep coming up the place. And I was thinking, and people think that's acceptable and that's normal kind of online. But then I would say, imagine if you're in a shopping mall and you go into a store and you're browsing some shoes. Somebody comes up and goes, how can I help you? Can I help you today? And you're like, no, I'm just browsing, I'm looking around. And you spot a pair of shoes and you go, I might come back for those later. But then as you leave the shop, you have this little minion with a silver platter on their head with a pair of shoes that are like following you around the shopping mall. Yeah. You look at that, it's patently preposterous.
Yeah.
But that's what's happening in the digital yes. realm. Yeah. And you look at it and just go, that's not okay.
No. But people don't. And that is so interesting to me, that people don't really think about these things if it was a human to human interaction. I think that's always a very yeah. useful thing. So the minion is a good example. But I also said what I said in the keynote: try to keep a conversation or a relationship alive.
Yeah.
If you completely forget what's being said just now, it's like, well, I just said that. Well,
yeah.
I don't know. Or if you do remember it,
sure.
if you then bring up irrelevant topics, or don't really care about anything but yourself. That's yeah. just not a way to have a normal conversation.
So why now empathy? Kind of what's changed to bring that to the fore? I mean, there's a lot of people are starting to talk about it, that it's the empathy deficit, as it were. Is yeah. that what driving this?
It's a lot of factors actually for Pega to sort of invest in this and look at this. First of all of this is premedicated on the fact that we are in many of these organizations the central brain. If you're not, you don't control empathy, and it's just a hobby,
yeah.
right? It's just a little bit of like, okay, let's see what we can do. But
nice to
in
talk
our
about.
Case, yes, it's like, okay, sure. But in our case, because we usually own the vast majority of all the interactions, it actually is a material impact. So that is an important thing. Otherwise, we wouldn't even have bothered with this.
Okay.
Right? So we can...
So it's a case of like, you can, because you've got kind of view of it, and therefore you can see that you can make a difference, because you've got access into kind of a view of it.
Yes, and we see the data. So we own, for the company, all of these interactions,
yeah.
and therefore we can actually measure empathy, not
right.
like empathy in email or empathy online or empathy in another.
So we're not
channel.
Talking about sentiment
like
analysis
overall,
so necessarily. It's like a much, much broader thing.
Much, much broader. Yes, okay. We see millions, tens of millions, hundreds of millions of interaction every day.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's one thing. So why now? We couldn't do this before we had a respectable number of large brands that were actually using this brain. So we couldn't have done this like, you know, 10 years ago.
So, I mean, because that was the thing that I was thinking about when you talked about kind of what you've done and how you developed this new interface, which is sort of an empathy, kind of customer empathy kind of manager, and there's the sliders and everything else. But it made me think about it's like going, and you sort of, there was a round table before, because I was thinking about this feels like next gen, next best action, because to do next best action, you have to have empathy baked into it, or development, or is it kind of more than that?
No, it's like I would redefine that a little bit. So I think next best action is really what it always is. This is about defining what's best in next best action, right? So the best in next best action, that metric is very important to the company. And if best for a company is like, hey, let's make the quickest buck, right? Let's go for value maximization, then that's their next best action, mm-hmm. right? Or is the next best action more considerate? And that's just how you rank the action. So in our case, adding empathy, it only took, I'm making air quotes, it only took looking at sort of the next best action strategies and then say, hey, some of these part of these strategies, the conditions and the rules and the logic are empathetic considerations like mm-hmm. suitability and relevance and value to the customer and context awareness. So we can check pretty easily if those were considered when you were making a decision.
Right.
And that's what we have done, but it is really only, air quotes again, the next best, the best in next best action.
Right. Okay. And so, because that, but then it all feels that's great. But then I was thinking about the idea about empathy and what it means to be empathic or empathetic, whichever word you want to use, and how that is, it's contextual and it's subjective and. Made me think about how do you localize this, because you talked about it that actually it's about almost like next best action and the empathy engine is about hyper personalization sort mm-hmm. of almost, but how do you localize that, take account of some of the differences, like maybe it's like a gender difference or an experience difference or kind of an age difference, or how do you blend that in, or is that something that the system learns over time?
No, it's not. It's actually simpler than that, but I think also maybe more practical in the sense that we're looking at sort of the almost impossible to refute elements in. If you put yourself in the customer's shoes, then what would a customer think is important,
right?
And that's sort of, you know, sort of the easy ones are relevance and suitability or appropriateness, mm-hmm. the value, did you remember me?
Yeah.
Those kind of things. So all of these things basically see as like they get like a score, right? And that's how we determine the empathy level of any particular decision that's being made individually.
Right. Okay. Because I think then you get into is using the empathy to increase personalization, so it gets closer to what people kind of want.
Yeah.
And the challenge with the kind of personalization that I've found is that whilst the largest majority of customers will say, "Oh, more personalized service." Good thing, mm-hmm. But then there's this like Forrester talked about is this personalization paradox, sort of that people want it, but then they have concerns about data and privacy and security and everything else. And then you dig into it even further, and it's something like there's a large number of marketeers that will admit that some of their personalization efforts are borderline, if not completely creepy.
Oh, for sure.
And then it completely undermines this kind of the whole thing. So it's like, I guess my question is that. Because if you get it wrong, then it erodes trust. Because I think that you have this empathy, because you want to build your empathy to improve in personalization, but it has to then build trust, and you have to get it right. So how does the system work to help marketeers, I guess, or professionals learn how not to be creepy?
Yeah.
So like not learn to kind of like to hire a whole bunch of minions to follow you around with instead of kind of shoes on the tray. I mean, is that come from the experimentation side of things, or how does that work?
I think it's also, and obviously I'm talking to a lot of our customers, and they're always very wary of this because you can, you know, this is pretty powerful AI, and it sees a lot of data, so it's very easy to be creepy.
Yeah.
Like,
Well, just because you can doesn't mean you should.
Exactly. I didn't know you knew this.
Yeah.
Right? And there are many sort of tricks, and I use that respectfully because I think people can be freaked out and think it's creepy, but it's actually a good service. So sometimes what companies do is they just don't make it seem like it is, you know, just for you. So although they know exactly that it is you, they would say, oh, well, you know, people like this have, and it's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
And but that's the social influence element.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. But I could have said, "Hey, Adrian, listen. This we is, know you this just is this is you."
Yeah.
And
you're
then,
like going,
"Yeah,
hang on.
Yeah.
Have you been following me?"
Yeah.
You, yes, we have, but
yes.
In the shadows.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's that's so that's one element.
Yeah.
But yeah, typically with Next Best Action, people are definitely making sure that they don't overstep sort of the boundaries. But in the tool, to be honest, we don't, because what is creepy to you is not, you know, creepy to me, and it's like...
Which is kind of interesting, because that's it has all sorts of variety kind of in there. I mean, and makes me think about how different people are taking different approaches to personalization. Some people are using lots of data to try and use predictive analytics to kind of get that right. Yeah. Some people are going, actually, it's not about the amount of data, but it's the quality of the data, and they're asking three or four quality questions, and having two customers and allowing customers to self-define what a personalized experience looks like to them, or what an empathetic experience looks like to them. I mean, I guess. Is the customer involved in this kind of process, or is this more just about what the customer does and the data and the behavior, and it's the analysis of the data, but there's no real customer input other than kind of how they've reacted?
Yes, well, but that is a big input.
Well, of course. Right?
Because that's how I measure, I think, a lot, but am I being empathetic? If you say, you know, that's part of, so we say something or we do something, and that elicits a response,
sure.
And that is telling, and the AI, well, that's all the AI does, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like learning from responses, and it may not actually have internalized empathy, right? It doesn't, probably doesn't understand, but it won't understand.
It doesn't understand.
But it acts like it does.
Yeah.
Well, but this is like, you know, getting into a whole Turing thing, right?
The Turing test.
But yeah, let's assume it doesn't really understand it, but it definitely behaves like it does.
Mm-hmm.
And if it's wrong, it will be taught otherwise very quickly, especially with the volume of interactions that we usually see, right?
Yeah.
Because I don't have to learn it just from talking to you.
Sure.
Right? I can, you know, understand the effectiveness of my decision by talking to a million people in 20 different channels.
So how do the systems kind of, if you like, course correct if it gets something wrong with a person, sort of thing? Does it built in sort of recovery strategies? Because otherwise it feels like there might be collateral damage along the way.
Yeah, yeah. Well,
as
Next Best Action is not a one-shot thing. So the Next Best Action is, hey, we need to talk about this.
Right.
This particular phone, whatever it is.
Okay.
Right? And you say no. Then is an input. No, but the context changes.
Yeah, yeah.
So the Next Best Action will say, okay, this was the action we recommended before. Now there is a no. And it doesn't just mean that we will not offer that again. No. All sorts of things change because of that no.
Right.
Like
okay.
Your likelihood to churn, maybe your risk profile. There's like 1,000 small things that change.
Mm-hmm.
And the Next Best Action will take all of that into account. It's like a normal conversation. You say something, you know.
I listen, internalize it, think about it. What does that mean in context?
Exactly.
And so the other thing I was going to think about, so this is, it's interesting. And I guess my question would be, there's a lot of companies that are talking about wanting to be customer centric and customer focused and all these sort of things. But sometimes what they say and what they do is completely different.
Completely.
And so is this sort of tool, are you finding it's going to make, or is it making organizations more empathetic?
Yeah, so I think so.
Because there's a tail and the dog sort of like thing.
Exactly.
And
yes.
So it's like, and so this could be the tail that's going to wag the dog. And I guess, because my bigger question is like, how do you get to that point of deciding to be empathetic?
Yes. Well.
Because you experience it, or you just decide and then you kind of like, then you...
I feel like, so the way we're trying to solve this, and we'll see, because we haven't released this product yet.
Yeah, so
right?
This is coming out kind of like later in the year.
Last quarter. Around the end of the year, I would say. Could be Q1, could be Q4.
Okay, so it could be Q4 this year, it could be Q1 next year.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Watch this space, folks.
No. I think the angle here is that if companies see, you know, that things really don't work, if they get the feedback that this is not empathetic, and there are very clear reasons because it goes against the relevance, against suitability, etc.
And they can see the opportunity cost.
All of those kind of things. The customer centricity is by definition an empathetic consideration.
Yeah.
So this will punish, making air quotes again, punish companies that are doing, you know, campaigns and blast campaigns with their 0.5 response rate.
Mm.
Because that is just by going massively against people's interest and wasting people's time, very unempathetic. So this will make that very explicit.
I think it also makes it transparent because, you know, we're all humans and organizations come under different pressures, and particularly if you're not going to make your monthly numbers or your quarterly numbers, and they go, we're going to move across to the hard, cold, blue side of things and bombard people. Then there's going to be, that makes it explicit. I feel like you might win, but you might lose. You'll probably lose in the long run as well.
Yes. Well, and that's the thing, right? There is a cost to no.
Yeah.
Right. So if a customer says no to you, not only did you not sell the product that you wanted to sell, but you likely missed an opportunity to have a yes for something you would have sold. So there are real costs to this, and this will make that really explicit.
Okay.
Like, and it's, for instance, if people are really not interested in your particular mortgage offer or your particular phone or rate plan or whatever it is, and you keep spamming them, you are sucking a lot of moments out of the business that could have been used for other businesses. So that's why I think empathy, it's not just being nice, it's also actually having better relationships.
So what you've said is that, I asked you before as well, it's like empathetic versus kind of non-empathetic sort of strategies, as it were. It's like this is like a WWE kind of like SmackDown wrestling match. Mm-hmm. Then you're basically saying that your research and your data is telling you that empathetic strategies, they win.
Yeah, more empathetic. Because if you go overboard, which you can do, but you know, at some point it will cost you too much money. I mean, you know, people will probably love you if you just give away things and reduce your margins. But you know, there's a point where that's not really.
You got to find that balance.
Yes, okay. Exactly.
And so the other thing that was that was interesting. The final question on this is that your colleague Peter talked about in the roundtable. He's talked about forcing the issue, and it felt like to me he's like going, "This is a mission, right? It feels like a mission." It was like, technology aside, in many ways, it's like, the technology is the tool, but there's a mission, kind of almost. It's a bit like, this is the drum, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes.
We're banging the drum.
Yes.
And that's what it feels like. It's almost like you're campaigning, in many ways.
Yes. Now, there is definitely, and it's not even, to be completely honest, about thou shalt use empathy. It's more about that we really believe that companies are much, much more successful if they are one-to-one.
Yeah.
And one-to-one is inherently more empathetic. So forcing the issue is also look at the money and goodwill that you are losing because of your insistence to spam people.
Okay. Just one final question on this, because it's something that occurred to me yesterday, was the, so Adriana Gascoigne from Girls in Tech sort of spoke, and she talked about this gender deficit. And we've been talking about an empathy deficit in businesses, and you're trying to kind of reduce that. And I thought about sort of programming like data and models and learning and things, and thinking about in tech companies, there's both a, as Adriana kind of talked about, there's a gender deficit, but there's also a diversity deficit as well. And I'm just thinking, that's an interesting circle to square, is it not? Kind of like, you know, if you want to be more empathetic, but we've got a gender diversity kind of deficit as well, is that kind of like, does that become problematic? Or is it, because you talked about in your keynote how it's all about the data, data is wrong, and if we're pulling it from the wrong places, or we're kind of programming it, or making the wrong sort of assumptions. So I guess it's like, this is not silver bullet, I guess.
Well, but what is really cool about AI, certain classes of AI, is that it is actually, it's learning from actual exposure. So in a very important way, it is unbiasing itself.
Right.
Right. So it may have been looking at data that was biased because of previous policies in a company, but once it's starting to expose it, say, oh, we need to, you know, offer this mortgage again, and the extreme example would be if this was a business that only had women, only had female customers, and it was trying to make a model for who to sell mortgages to, they have no idea you know, how men are going to respond to that. So it's completely biased towards women. But once you are start doing that online and men are not responding favorably, AI will say, okay, I got it wrong, right? And it will learn very quickly that, you know, that it is biased.
Okay.
Right? So that's one thing that I think really helps companies to unbias themselves. But that said, you should always look at, like, even in the results, and we do this in our tools as well, where you if you overall, if you've looked at the mortgages or the loans or whatever products that you have sold, if this was a bank, right, what is actually from a diversity perspective or a gender perspective or from an age perspective, although that will clearly have an impact on mortgages, but is this what you expected,
right?
Or is it like really bad?
Right.
Are you basically refusing to give mortgages to men, for instance?
Okay. Now, it's just something that occurred to me. I was like going, Andrew and I was talking about that, and then we've got this, and I'm like, how does that work? Anyway, mindful of time. Thank you for that. Two last questions. I published this book, Punk CX, very recently, and I've been doing my own piece of social research, asking me two questions. So if I would say to you, if you were to pick sort of two words that you just intuitively thought embodied or described a more of a punk approach to customer service or customer experience, what would those two words be?
I would say radical and experimental.
Perfect, thank you. And then the second question is, if I was to say to you, which brands or organizations do you think I embody that sort of punk kind of ethos? They're a bit like going, everybody's going that way, we're going to go that way, and it's like two fingers up to the rest of the world. We don't care because we're going to go. So if there's like a brand or a couple of brands that you think embody that sort of approach, and you'd like to say they're just punk in their mindset, their attitude, who would that be?
Well, I wouldn't want to call out brands. But I would say that I think companies
or organizations,
that
just
but organizations in general that are now, I think there are a couple of areas that I would call, you know, punk in your definition, and for instance, the whole advertising model, right, that is going to, it's radically changing, right, with the role of agencies being very different. And I'm not sure, you know, in my definition of punk as being radical, I think there is a big move, I think, towards consumers owning their own data and basically renting it back to the advertisers. I think that's where we are going with GDPR and those kind of things. So that will take a while, but I think that is definitely a challenger CX kind of thing.
Perfect. Rob, always a pleasure. Thank you very much.
Brilliant. Thank you very much.
Well, that's it for another interview. I really hope you enjoyed it. Now, every time I complete one of these interviews, I learn something new, and I try and incorporate that new learning into my writing, my speaking, my workshops, and the consulting that I do for my clients. If you're interested, you can find out more about how I work with clients over at adrianswimsko.com. But one final thing before I go, please consider heading over to iTunes or whichever podcast platform you choose to use, and do leave a review. Every little helps, as they say. Anyway, that's all for now. Thank you for listening, and do listen in again. All the very best.